Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
This month got off to a very strange start for Anna Hokemer.
April 1st was a fabulous day that was mixed with horror and human tragedy. It's the only time in my life so far that I've ever simultaneously laughed and cried.
To explain why Anna broke down in tears in her car that day, I need to introduce you. Anna's a politician in Miami, a member of the Pinecrest Village Council. But for the last few months, she's become better known for her abortion activism. And at the start of this month, she was waiting on the Florida Supreme Court. The court was set to rule on two things. First, Florida's 15-week abortion ban. If the court okayed it, it would clear the way for an even more restrictive ban the state legislature just passed. Second, the court was going to weigh in on a constitutional amendment Anna was fighting to get on the ballot. This amendment would preserve abortion access throughout the state. In the end, the court decided, why not both? Which leads us back to Anna, scrolling through her phone.
I sat in the car, opening up the rulings that were issued by the Florida Supreme Court on April 1st, and I first saw that they'd approved our ballot measure, and I began to, giggle and whoop with joy. And then I scrolled down and saw that they'd upheld the 15-week abortion ban, which was going to trigger the 6-week abortion ban with virtually no exceptions for rape or incest. And my eyes started to tear up, and I was a bit of a mess there for a minute or so until I got a hold of myself. It is the hardest situation to be in as somebody who's involved in politics to have the realization that hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people are likely going to be affected by an inhumane law, and that inhumanity actually strengthens the political work that you're trying to do at the same time. It's not a pretty feeling.
Did you ever think, is this an April Fool's joke?
I was concerned, actually. So as we got closer and closer and closer to the deadline for our constitutional amendment, which was April 1st, and I actually did speak to the people who do communications for us and say, we have to be prepared for people to think this is an April Fool's joke.
You know, in the weeks since these twin abortion rulings came out in your state, another state made headlines for restricting abortion, Arizona. And just like in Florida, it was the Supreme Court that shifted the dynamics, ruling that an 1864 law that punishes abortion providers with prison time is applicable more than 150 years after it was first written, which was before Arizona was even a state. And advocates in Arizona are trying to do what you've been doing, get abortion on the November ballot. What's your message to them?
Keep the faith. You can do it. I mean, we had so many obstacles to overcome that it was hard to get people to understand that the polling was in our favor. 75% of Floridians reject a 6-week abortion ban. Over 60% of Republicans in this state support the language in our constitutional amendment.
And now we just have to see how many of those people will vote. Today on the show, the fight over abortion moves to Florida and Arizona. How will it scramble the 2024 political map? I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier, and it could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, or even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. So, Anna, can you tell me, like, right now, if I needed an abortion in Florida, would I be able to get one? Like, how would it even work?
Right now, you can get an abortion. You can get an abortion until May. Unfortunately, it means that if you ovulated last week, you're going to be in trouble in May because of the six-week ban. Hmm. And I know that the abortion funds, these emergency funds that have existed to help low-income women get access to abortion for a long time, are absolutely stretched to the limit, helping women leave who need second trimester abortions. But today, you're fine.
So are reproductive health clinics planning to stay open? Like, I just imagine there's so much uncertainty for them right now.
There's a tremendous amount of uncertainty right now because the six-week abortion ban that's about to come into effect on May 1st contains language as well that makes anyone who, quote, participates, unquote, in an abortion subject to prosecution for a felony. It does not define what participating in an abortion is. Does that mean a husband who drives his wife to a clinic is going to be arrested and tried as a felon for helping his wife? Does that mean a pharmacist who dispenses medication to a patient is going to be arrested and tried as a felon? Does that mean that an attorney, like the woman who helped the 10-year-old in Ohio who had been abused and raped and needed abortion care and had to leave the state of Ohio, she was subjected to arrest and possible prosecution. One of the tactics that's used broadly, not just in Florida, but across the country, is to write these laws in a way that's vague, and it's meant to intimidate people. It's meant to make people so scared and uncertain about the consequences of their actions that they do absolutely nothing.
Walk me through your signature gathering. What did you do? How did you organize people? And who were you looking to sign on to say, yes, I want this on the ballot?
You know, Florida is a gigantic state. I think for a lot of people outside of Florida, just understanding the sheer geography is a little bit challenging. And because Florida requires wet signatures, so you have actual physical pieces of paper that people with a pen have to fill out with their name and their address and their contact information and sign, and that piece of paper has to be mailed to the appropriate election supervisor to have the individual signature verified. There are 67 counties in Florida. The organizational and operational challenge is mammoth. We ended up having to get about 891,000 verified signatures on the assumption that a few of them, you know, are going to be incomplete or somebody, you know, signed their signature in a way that's not exactly the same way that they signed it 25 years ago when they registered to vote. You assume you've got to collect about 1.2 million of these petitions, and you've got to do it across the state. You have to do it in at least 14 out of 28 of our congressional districts. So you're talking about, you know, a 1,000-mile range.
So you were looking for conservative people?
We were looking for anybody who was willing to limit government interference with abortion. And we did not particularly care who they were or where they came from, as long as they were a registered voter and helped get us closer to the end zone to qualify.
But getting all those signatures was just an initial step. After that, the Supreme Court had to weigh in on the referendum's language, ensuring it only covered a quote-unquote single subject. That's the ruling that came down at the beginning of this month, ensuring Anna's constitutional amendment would go on the ballot.
You know, in Florida, you need 60% of voters to vote for your amendment to add it to the state's constitution. This is a larger percentage of votes than I think any other state has gotten on these abortion amendments in the last couple of years. How do you plan to cross that threshold?
Yeah, but Florida always overperforms. We always do it. And that's a joke. The Florida's had the 60% threshold to amend the Constitution for a very long time. So this is not something new for us. This isn't something, you know, that somebody imposed upon us in the middle of the game. And Florida has passed some fairly progressive referenda at the 60% threshold over the last decade or so. It passed a $15 minimum wage, passed the restoration of voting rights to felons, passed access to medical marijuana, fair districts in order to try and control the gerrymandering. All of these statewide referenda passed with a 60% threshold and a couple of times really blew well through the 60% threshold.
You sound bullish, but I gotta say, like, when I think about that 60% threshold, I do think of that felon disenfranchisement initiative in 2018. But I think about it because that initiative passed, and then the legislature in Florida immediately came back and put additional restrictions on voting for ex-felons that have made voting impossible for many. If your measure passes, do you worry that it's basically not the end of the story, even if you get the 60%, which is a hard ask?
Listen, worry that it's not the end of the story? It is not the end of the story. I would assume once this referendum passes, and it will pass, that the fight is not over. We then have to work with the Florida legislature on the implementing legislation. And there will have to be a conversation with Floridians about why it's important to elect candidates who support your issues if you actually want them to become the law of the land in the place where you live.
Anna, you're a Democrat, right?
I am. I am personally a Democrat.
Do you see abortion as a Democratic issue?
No. It's a human issue.
Huh.
It's a human issue. The reason I know that it's a human issue is because the vast majority of people that I know who are no party affiliation voters, who are Republican voters, support abortion access. There's just no real evidence that this is something that tacks entirely along, you know, one end of the political spectrum and is completely unacceptable at the other end of the political spectrum. I had the amazing experience of my own father, who's always identified as pro-life, who's a very conservative Republican, being so appalled by the six-week ban that he wrote a check for $1,000 to support our work. And he's made it very clear that he would support this sort of initiative. He thinks a six-week ban is crazy and cruel, to use his terminology. And if my dad, a 79-year-old Midwestern conservative Republican, thinks what's going on is crazy and cruel, I would imagine most Republicans agree.
I'm thinking of your dad when I think of the fact that over the weekend, Governor DeSantis called Florida a Republican state, pointed out it had 900,000 more registered Republicans than Democrats. And while you say abortion is not a Democratic issue, it's certainly an issue that Democrats have championed and Republicans have not. So given that stark landscape, why do you think your amendment can pass?
I think our amendment can pass because it's such a clear choice. It's such a real choice for everyone across the political spectrum. Oftentimes when we talk about these issues, especially on statewide or national levels, we're talking about abstractions. We're talking about issues that people don't actually deal with day to day in their real lives. They're things that they think about as happening on the border or happening in Washington, D.C. or happening, in foreign countries far, far away. But we all make babies. We all have families. Every one of us either has carried a child or is close to someone who's carried a child. And every one of us has a story of an aunt or a sister or a best friend whose pregnancy went terribly wrong and needed abortion care. It is something that every single Floridian and every single American has had to deal with. And that makes it different from other political issues that people vote on.
A lot of political reporters have noted this split ticket issue when it comes to abortion. Abortion is winning for Democrats around the country, but I'm not sure it's proven yet that it's working for Democratic candidates. People are interested in the issue, but not candidates. I guess I'm wondering if you think in the fall, having an issue like abortion on your ballot will shift things for someone like Joe Biden, who until recently had all but given up on the state of Florida as a red state.
I really don't know. And one of the reasons that I don't know is that we've never had a statewide referendum in Florida that coincided with a presidential election that had decided to make the statewide referendum issue a central topic of the presidential campaign. That means that hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars are going to be spent talking about this issue, not by the referendum, either its proponents or opponents, but by political candidates and campaigns across the country and at the national level. It will change the dynamics about how people think about candidates and how people think about this issue. What I do know is that far more people in Florida support this amendment than support any particular political candidate. And my objective is to pass Amendment 4. I take a very big tent position about this. I would never tell a candidate of any political stripe not to talk about Amendment 4 because they're running in a partisan race. I think the more the merrier is the way to go on this, and let individual candidates and campaigns find their own way.
If your ballot initiative passes this November, but Trump is in the White House, is that a victory for you? How do you even think about that?
Yes, I'm very clear about what my objective is. My objective is to pass Amendment 4.
Huh.
I'm not engaging in a presidential race. I am attempting to amend the Florida Constitution to limit government interference with abortion in the state of Florida. We need to keep our eye on the ball and make sure that we're focused on creating a big tent and getting ourselves over the finish line with 60% plus one. That's what I aim to do.
Anna, I'm really grateful for your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mary.
Coming up, how abortion bans nationwide could upend the 2024 election. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As we migrated more of our business to the cloud, we were seeing expenses go up, but we couldn't pinpoint the cause. It seemed less of a cloud, more of a fog. That's why we brought on Cloud Optimizer, and they saved the day.
Are you seeing your cloud hosting bills go up and you're not sure why? It's time to put Cloud Optimizer to work for you. Cloud Optimizer analyzes usage patterns, right-sizes resources, leverages discounts you may not be aware of, implements automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service.
With Cloud Optimizer, we have our spend under control. Our company is more agile, profitable, and we're getting peak performance from our cloud.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Florida is not the only state grappling with a brand new abortion ban this month. A few days after Florida's Supreme Court issued its rulings, Arizona's Supreme Court also weighed in. Its justices revived a ban from 1864. Like Florida, Arizona is also considering a referendum to protect abortion care in November, though advocates there are not quite so far along. I called up the 19th's Grace Panetta to explain how what's been happening in both states shifts the state of play nationally. And I asked Grace to start by explaining how an abortion ban from more than 150 years ago is suddenly the law of the land in Arizona.
It is an abortion ban that really hails from pre-statehood days, back when Arizona was a territory, not even a state yet. And of course, the laws like this were kind of made moot when the Supreme Court ruled that there is a federal right to abortion in Roe v. Wade. And people kind of forgot that laws like this were still on the books. But when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, all of a sudden, these century plus old laws come back into effect. And that's what happened in Arizona, where the legal landscape since the Dobbs decision has been incredibly confusing. This case over this ban kind of bounced around through the courts. The attorney general, former attorney general, tried to enforce it, and then it was blocked and was challenged up in the state Supreme Court, and which finally ruled that the ban can be in effect.
How has this scrambled Arizona's politicians?
It has, you know, thrown an absolute grenade into many key races in Arizona. Arizona is a critical battleground state in the presidential election. Joe Biden won it by about 11,000 votes in 2020.
It's not many.
It's not many at all. There is a key Senate race between Democrat Ruben Gallego, Republican Carrie Lake, a lot of key House races. What's important to know, too, about Arizona is not only is it very closely politically divided, but it's, you know, as one of those Western states that has this kind of independent streak. It's not particularly religiously conservative, and abortion rights are pretty, you know, popular there, and abortion bans are unpopular. So this really has the potential to shake up all of the dynamics going into November.
I think a big question right now is how what's happening in Arizona, but also in Florida, will end up influencing the general election. We've seen Joe Biden working really hard to make abortion a tentpole of his campaign. He's sending Kamala Harris to Arizona to rally supporters on this issue. He's now said Florida might be winnable for him because of abortion. Are you buying this? Like, what do you make of this?
Well, as it relates to ballot measures, we know that there's not really a clear relationship between voting for an abortion ballot measure and Democratic candidates winning. And the reason for that is because since the Dobbs decision, we've seen a lot of these pro-abortion rights ballot measures get a lot of crossover support from Republicans and independents. I really think it's more these abortion bans. We know that these kinds of strict abortion bans are incredibly unpopular among voters, especially in states like Arizona and Florida, where the electorate is overall pretty supportive of abortion rights. So I think these bans going into effect absolutely have the potential to help Democrats.
How important are Arizona and Florida to the Biden campaign, just generally, abortion or not?
Arizona is going to be a critical state for them to win in terms of thinking about the electoral college map. They, you know, absolutely need to win that state and its electoral votes to have a good shot at getting to 270 and staying in the White House. Florida is a trickier proposition. It used to be a swing state flipping back and forth, and it's trended quite Republican in the past few presidential election cycles. So it's not entirely clear yet the extent of the Biden campaign's investment in Florida, but definitely the 6-week ban has the potential to move some votes there. It's unclear whether or not that's going to, you know, push Biden over the top there. It's just a very heavy lift at this point to for a Democrat to get over 50% of the vote in Florida right now.
The other side of all this is Trump, of course, the Republican candidate for president.
Yes.
And just in the last week or so, there's been so much flip-flopping from him, basically trying to slip out from any kind of understandable stance on abortion. Like he's proudly said for a long time, I got the Supreme Court justices out there who made Roe v. Wade go away.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and, in fact, demanded be ended, Roe v. Wade.
But then he issued this video basically rejecting the idea of a national abortion ban, saying the issue should be left to the states.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state.
And then after Arizona's Supreme Court ruled, he said, oh, they went too far. Like, what's happening here? Is there a discernible stance from Trump?
No, there is not. There's not really a discernible stance on abortion. So the things we do know about Trump are, number one, he has a very transactional relationship with anti-abortion groups. This is something I think he is pretty clear about. They're pretty clear about. When he was in office, he really did what they wanted, which was appoint a majority of justices who would overturn Roe v. Wade. At the same time, he likes to win elections. He has, you know, a sense for what's popular and not unpopular. And he's also kind of a unique figure on this issue, especially. He's been able to separate himself from the generic Republican, congressional Republican brand on abortion, in part by how much he has muddied the waters on this issue.
You've talked about how a lot of the abortion measures that have passed at the state level, they've relied on Republican support, people who vote for abortion access, even though they're very comfortable voting for Republican candidates down ballot or on another part of the ballot.
I think it's depended a bit. I think you're absolutely right to point out that when we think about the 2022 midterms, shortly after the Dobbs decision, there were candidates in states like Texas and Florida and Ohio who really did not take that much of a hit over abortion. But when you think about a state like Arizona, we saw candidates like Carrie Lake, Blake Masters, an attorney general candidate who lost by 280 votes. So I think it has stuck to candidates who either are embracing these unpopular positions or who have not been able to articulate a coherent message and are running in a place where the electorate is pretty supportive of abortion rights. And I think we're seeing that now with candidates like Carrie Lake, now running for Senate, who is totally backtracking and saying, oh, I support lawmakers doing something to repeal this 1864 ban. And when I get to Congress, I'm going to advocate for the child tax credit and baby bonds, which is a very different tune than she was singing when she ran just 2 years ago. And so the question is, are voters going to see through that? And I think the indication that we've gotten in elections so far is that voters just do not trust Republicans on this issue. And that is still going to be a challenge for them.
Grace, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Grace Panetta is a politics reporter for the 19th. Earlier, we heard from Anna Hokemer. She's the executive director of the Florida Women's Freedom Coalition. And that is our show. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Madeline Ducharme, and Anna Phillips. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate, and I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. Catch you back here next time.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.